Hello and welcome to the programme which looks at the Holy Land. I am Paul Calvert. Psalm 102, verse 1 and 2 from the New King James Bible says this: Hear my prayer, O Lord, and let my cry come to you. Do not hide your face from me in the day of my trouble. Incline your ear to me in the day that I call. Answer me speedily.
I'm with Rachel Goldberg from Bring Hirsch Home Campaign. Now, Rachel, who is Hirsch?
Hirsch is my son. He's my eldest child. He is 23 years old, and he is currently being held hostage in Gaza.
Now, there was obviously a terrible terrorist attack in Israel on the 7th of October. How did you get to hear about it, and how did things come about? Tell us your story.
Well, on the evening of October 6th, we actually went to synagogue together as a family, because it was the Jewish holiday Simchat Torah, which is when we finish reading the entire Torah, the entire Old Testament, actually just the first five, and then we spin the Torah back to the beginning. And it's considered a really joyous, probably the most joyous of our holidays. And we dance with the Torah at synagogue. And so we were together as a family. I have Hirsch as my eldest, as I mentioned, and then I have two daughters who are 20 and 18. So the five of us were at synagogue, and then we went to friends who lived nearby for dinner. And Hirsch had brought his camping backpack with him because he had said that after dinner, he and one of his childhood best friends, whose name is Honor, were going to go out camping and doing something fun. So around 11 p.m. on Friday, October 6th, he kissed my husband, John. He kissed me, and he said, I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. And that was 143 days ago. The next morning, my husband left for synagogue at 7:30 in the morning, and I was having a cup of tea and was going to join him a bit later. And right around 8 o'clock, there were bomb sirens that went off in Jerusalem, which is where we live, and that's quite unusual. So I woke up my two daughters, who were still sleeping, and we got into our bomb shelter, which is located in our apartment. Every apartment in Israel actually has a bomb shelter in the newer buildings built into the actual apartment itself. And in older buildings, they have a communal one for the whole building, usually in the ground floor or basement. So the girls and I got into our bomb shelter. We waited 10 minutes, which is the protocol. We didn't hear any explosions and we came out. Normally, I don't use my phone on the Jewish Sabbath or any technology like TV or radio, but because I knew it was a question of life or death, because I knew Hirsch and Aner were camping out somewhere outside and that there were rockets falling somewhere in the country, I did turn on my phone so that I could contact him. And as soon as I turned on my phone at 8:20, two WhatsApp messages popped up that had been received at 8:11. They were both from Hirsch to the group that I have with he, John, and me, the three of us together. And the first message said, I love you. And the second message said, I'm sorry. So immediately, I knew something horrible was happening. I tried to call. He didn't answer. I texted him back. Are you okay? Let me know you're okay. He never obviously replied to any of those. And what we came to find out is that Honor and Hirsch were at the Nova Music Festival with about 3,000 other young people, crunchy granola hippie, you know, type of young people. And when the massacre began, which ultimately that massacre killed 367 of those young people from that festival, Hirsch, Honor, and two other young people managed to escape into a car. They couldn't get the car to go north because there were Hamas gunmen lining the road, shooting everyone coming toward them in cars. So they made a U-turn and there were rockets falling. And so they stopped the car and ran into a roadside bomb shelter, which a lot of these young people did. There turned out to be 29 young people from the festival smashed into a 2 meters by a 1.80 meter bomb shelter. So you can imagine how squished and packed they were in there, that small space. Hamas came to the doorway. They threw in hand grenades, which Aner managed to toss out 7 of them, which was incredible. But on the 8th one, while it was in his hand, it exploded and killed him. And then Hamas came to the doorway and threw in another 3 hand grenades, which detonated. And then they sprayed the room with machine gun fire. So most of those young people were dead. Some were fortunately which I say ironically, but fortunately they were trapped under the dead bodies because they were allowed to pretend that they were dead. And there were three or four young men, it's not clear, who were slumped against the opposite wall, who were all wounded but clearly alive. They couldn't pretend to be dead. Hirsch was one of those. And Hamas gunmen came in and they told the young men to stand up. And when they stood up, all of the people who were peeking out from underneath the dead bodies, we spoke to four of those witnesses. They told us that Hirsch's left arm from the elbow down had been blown off. He had something tied around the stump. They didn't know if it was a t-shirt, a piece of fabric. They didn't know what that was. And three of those young men, at least three we know of, were marched out and put on a Hamas pickup truck that headed toward Gaza. And our last phone cell signal from Hirsch came from within Gaza at 10:25 in the morning, Saturday morning, October 7th. And then subsequently, a week later, we were on an interview live with Anderson Cooper from CNN. And at the end of the interview, he actually said, I'm going to call you guys now. We didn't know why he would do that. And he called and he told us that he had footage of the actual abduction of Hirsch because he had gone to the Nova site to do a documentary for CNN about the music festival and the massacre that happened there. And while he was down there and he was looking at the bomb shelters, Israeli soldiers came over and he was interviewing some of them. And one of them shared with him a GoPro camera that they had found that had fallen off one of the helmets of one of the Hamas gunmen. And that is the footage that, among other pieces of, you know, what happened that morning, there's this section where Hirsch and we see two other young men being taken from the bomb shelter. Hirsch is walking on his own 2 feet at gunpoint, but he gets himself up onto the pickup truck. And when he turns to sit down is when you can see the stump of his left arm, what was his left arm from the elbow down, with some jagged bones sticking out. And I'll just mention that Hirsch is actually left-handed, so that was his dominant arm. And that is what happened to our family on October 7th, and it's been 143 days of us living on another planet.
You haven't heard anything about him since, so you don't know if he's alive or dead?
Well, we know that the presumption is that he is alive. From what we understand from Israeli intelligence, that morning, the earlier you were kidnapped and the younger you were, the more that they tried to save you, because hostages are much more valuable alive. And Hirsch was, you know, we received those texts at 8:11 with him saying, I'm sorry. So clearly he knew he was in trouble. I think he actually was thinking that he was going to die. And I think he was apologizing because he knew we were about to suffer horrible agony and misery, which is correct. And we know that he was taken early. You know, there were people taken in the afternoon. And then I think medical care was much harder to get. We know from the hostages that were released at the end of November that many of them were treated by veterinarians because there just was a shortage of regular medical care. But we have been told by the intelligence units that unless you hear active, you know, confirmation of your loved one being dead, which a lot of people tragically have that confirmation, that the working assumption is that they are alive. So, and as you can imagine, as a person of faith and as a, you know, as a parent, and, you know, we try to remain optimistic and we try to remain hopeful and we pray all day, every day, you know, for this to end with a good ending. We're aware that not just the hostage families are suffering horribly. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of innocent Gazan civilians who are suffering horribly, horribly, horribly. And, you know, we're very aware that this is a global humanitarian crisis, what is now happening.
Has life stopped for you and your family since October the 7th?
It has completely stopped in terms of our life. We call it the before. You know, I have not gone back to my job, my regular job. My husband, John, also has not. We work full time doing the Bring Hirsch Home campaign. And it's really part of a larger campaign. I mean, obviously, we want to save Hirsch. We also want to save the 133 other, or I should say, we want to bring them home. Some of them are already no longer alive. We know that. So the ones that are alive, we want to bring them home alive. And we work about 20 hours a day, relentlessly, tirelessly. And time is frozen for us in many ways. I couldn't believe it the other day, realizing that it's almost March, because truly in my mind, it is October 7th.
What sort of things are you doing to campaign for this?
Well, we kind of have had a two-pronged approach from the beginning. One prong is really focusing on advocacy and sharing the story and trying desperately to explain to the world that the hostage crisis really is its own encapsulated crisis, meaning on October 7th, when 242 people were dragged across the border, at that time, they were representing 39 different countries. They were representing Christians, Jews, Muslims, Buddhists, and Hindus. The youngest hostage was a 9-month-old baby named Kfir, and the oldest hostage was an 87-year-old grandmother who actually also was a Holocaust survivor. At this point, after the releases that have taken place, there are 134 hostages being held that represent 19 different nations, and still all five of those religions are being held there. Kfir has celebrated his first birthday, if you could call it celebrated, at the end of January. So now the youngest hostage, Kfir, is now 1 year old. And the oldest hostage is 86. The 87-year-old Holocaust survivor was actually released in the first deal that happened at the end of November. So we've tried very hard to advocate that this is a unique situation and the world should be dealing with this in a very different way. I have the strong belief that if those exact people, if that exact demographic that I just described had been kidnapped and taken to Dallas, Texas, that the whole world would have shown up on October 8th or 9th. Just like, remember a few years ago, there was that soccer team of young boys from Thailand who somehow got trapped in a cave somewhere, and the whole world showed up to try to help save them, and it took many weeks, but they were able to save them. I think the tragic misfortune for that, for the group of hostages that were taken, is that they're being held in a place that is a very complicated place that does have a loaded background. We have had problems for, you know, many years too long with our neighbors in Gaza, and it is a complicated, and certainly now, I mean, it's a complete humanitarian crisis, what's happening in Gaza. And I think, you know, that these things are being conflated together is so unfortunate and tragic for these hostages who are really just pawns in a game, as are these innocent Gazan civilians who are pawns in a game as well. But now both things are happening in the same place, which is not, you know, helpful for either. So our first prong was advocacy and just explaining the situation, because I think, you know, from what the rhetoric and the screaming that we hear is that people are saying all these hostages are Jews, all these hostages are Israeli. And if you happen to hate Jews or hate Israelis, so then, you know, you don't really care about this hostage situation, which ignores the fact that we have Muslim Arab hostages being held with Hirsch. So I think that that's an important piece of information for people who are screaming to know about. So that was one prong. And the second prong was a diplomatic, you know, political prong to try to meet as many people in power and as many leaders all over the world as possible to try to help get these people free. So a typical day is we do a ton of press, especially because we happen to speak English. We, both my husband and I, were born and raised in Chicago, and Hirsch was born in Berkeley, California. He's a dual American-Israeli citizen. We lived in Richmond, Virginia, which is near Washington, D.C., for 4 years. And then right before Hirsch turned 8, we moved to Israel. So we very much have a foot in both worlds in terms of our English speaking. And so we are asked often to go and speak in different locations. I spoke twice to the UN. I spoke once in New York and once in Geneva. I was asked to go speak to the Pope on behalf of the hostages with another group, a small group of other hostage families. I was asked to speak with the president of Israel to Elon Musk, many different people who are seen as leaders with power, influence, and, you know, a voice louder than any of the hostages who are being held without a voice. And then we speak to groups. We speak to groups of people, big groups. Yesterday, we ended up speaking to 500 people between two different groups that we spoke to that were here either on solidarity missions from all different faiths or, you know, just from people from all over the world. And we also spend a lot of our time talking to people, ministers in the Israeli government who are not necessarily convinced that the hostage issue is the priority. You know, the Israeli government has stated that their objective is first, they say there are two equal objectives. One is to diminish Hamas's military capacity so they are not able to replicate October 7th again, which I understand. And the second, supposedly equally important objective is to get these hostages back home. But we see a lot more action on the first goal, and we see a lot less action on the second goal, and a lot more foot dragging, and a lot more deciding if we should talk, when we should talk, who we should talk to, should we talk, what should we talk about? Okay, then maybe in another week we'll talk. And the problem is the urgency, because we know the hostages are dying. You know, they're in an active war zone. And the situation in Gaza is dire for anyone living in Gaza. It doesn't matter if you're a citizen of Gaza or if you are a hostage in Gaza. Being in Gaza right now is one of the most dangerous places on earth. And, you know, it is something that we as hostage families are obviously terrified about every single moment of every single day.
That is obviously a very emotional time. Is your faith helping you at the moment?
It definitely is. You know, we were faithful people. We've both, my husband and I, have been privileged to lead a religious life for many years. My husband was privileged to be born and raised in a very religious home. My home had strong Jewish values, but I didn't grow up in an observant religious home until my parents switched me to an Orthodox Jewish day school when I was 13. And then from that time, I've lived a religious life. And I will say that praying every morning, which I do religiously, it takes about a half an hour, is very important, especially during this time when you feel so unmoored in so many ways. My faith helps anchor me. Throughout the day, I am constantly saying different psalms, which I find very helpful. I've said that I feel like Psalms is a self-help book because you can pick out the one that speaks to you in that moment. And of course, there are psalms of praise, but there are also psalms of saying, where are you? Don't hide your face from me, God. I'm suffering. I'm in the darkness and I need you. Where are you? And so that's very validating. And I will say that the Christian community has been absolutely beautiful, supportive, loving, and has completely shown up for us. And I will be forever eternally grateful to our Christian friends and neighbors around the world of all different brands of Christianity that have reached out to embrace us and embrace Hirsch and the other hostages and to pray for them. I have people who are in constant touch with me, sending me different psalms. They're saying Christmas Eve was beautiful. We received thousands and thousands of photographs of people's Christmas dinners with an empty plate that had Hirsch's name on it. We had people sending us photographs from Midnight Mass with Hirsch's poster and other posters of hostages on the altar with candles around those posters. You know, that gives me faith again, renewed faith in humanity, which, by the way, is what the Pope said to me when I was in Rome and I showed him the video of Hirsch's abduction. And he, Pope Francis, said, you know, what you've experienced is terrorism, and terrorism is the absence of humanity. And that was such a wise, succinct, helpful way for me to reconcile what has happened to us and what we are going through. It helps me have faith in the goodness of humanity and to understand that what happened to us and what is continuing to happen is a piece of a lack of humanity.
Are you hopeful for a deal to get the hostages out of Gaza?
I'm hopeful and desperate. Mm. I'm hopeful and desperate. And hope is mandatory. I say that all the time. You know, there's a wonderful book. Mystery is the last name of the writer. I'm forgetting his first name. A Fine Balance. It's a beautiful book about India. And the fine balance he describes is the fine balance between hope and despair. And I'm desperately trying to stay on the side of hope and not fall into despair. But there are moments where it's real fear, because it's clear to me now, after all of this time, that we are all pawns in this game, that just so few at the top, these leaders of all the parties, are playing a game. And my son and myself, my family, and all the hostage families and the innocent civilians in Gaza, we are the pawns in this game. And we have no say. We are just being played with until those leaders who all have different interests iron out and decide when the game will be over. And at that point, I don't know how many people will still be left alive.
Were you boosted in your encouragement when the first lot of hostages came out?
Oh, very much. That was wonderful. And, you know, we had been told beforehand that Hirsch would not be part of that deal, because that deal was for women, children, babies. And so we knew that. But we celebrated each life, because every life is a world unto itself. And we saw these universes walking back across the border into their families' embrace. And at that point, you know, we had already gotten to know many of those families. So when we saw our friend Moshe's wife and daughter come back to him, I mean, we were just elated. And when we saw our friend Yair's sister and niece come back to him, you know, we just absolutely celebrated that and would pray so fervently. We continue to pray for a replication of that. You know, it was very good for both sides. It stopped the fighting. It let in the humanitarian aid that was so desperately needed. And it let many of these hostages, I think the total number was 104 innocent women, children, babies, came home to their families.
Are the hostage families encouraging each other?
We are, but, you know, we're also broken and traumatized. So we're a community of people who are in agony. I mean, at all times, it's like having a branding iron searing into your back. Someone's holding a branding iron onto you. So it's a little bit difficult, you know, to remain strong for each other, because we're experiencing such excruciating agony. But we certainly are trying. And, you know, we also know what each other is going through, which I think is somewhat helpful, because regular people come up to me all the time every day and say, I can't imagine what you're going through. And I always say, I also can't imagine what I'm going through. But at least there are other families who are going through the same thing. And we look at each other, and there's just a knowing understanding that we all have the same visceral pain. What's so interesting is that the pain is emotional, psychological, you know, and physical and existential and spiritual. I mean, there's so many levels and layers to what we are experiencing. It is such a unique form of torture.
How can the Christian community pray for you and your family at this time?
Oh, well, I keep praying, first of all, obviously, nothing is impossible for the Lord. So, you know, anything that he wants to do to save these hostages, you know, we pray that God reaches out and saves these hostages. I think I pray often for the insight and wisdom of our leaders, and for them there to find their humanity and put a stop to this today. Today, they could stop this today. And I pray for them to stop this today. I pray for them to find the courage and the grace to stop this today. And I pray for Hirsch to stay strong and to survive and to come home alive today, along with all the other beloved hostages. And that's really what the Christian community can keep praying for, keep holding us up, praying for our strength to keep on going. There are, you know, there are parents who are in such a bad place, and wives and parent and grandparents and children of hostages who are in such a bad place that they're having trouble functioning. They can pray for their strength. I believe in the power of prayer. I know it works. I feel it working. And I really believe that Hirsch will come home. And I pray that the next time I talk to you, Paul, that you'll get to talk to him.
Yeah, that would be lovely. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for sharing today. And the Christian community are praying for you.
We are so grateful and gracious and thankful for it. And please don't stop.
Thank you for joining us today. Pray that God will move by his mighty power in the Holy Land and bring his peace.